One time, me and a group of buddies were driving through Texas, and we passed a building that looked like the Whataburger corporate office. Just to be sure, I checked my phone and discovered, yeah, we did just drive past the Whataburger corporate office. But what I found interesting was that the building had hundreds of one-star reviews. After some investigation, I found that these reviews weren't coming from the Whataburger corporate staff. No, these reviews were from once loyal customers who in one way or another had a negative experience at a Whataburger and were going to take this issue to the top! Reading people's wordy laments about their terrible fast food experiences has become a hobby of mine. And it's not just Whataburger. Every fast food corporate office has hundreds of one-star reviews. These people have been wronged by a billion-dollar company, and the only way they can get back at them is calling them stupid. The team at blah 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 have no intelligence whatsoever. I ordered 3 large lemonades, and all 3 spilled in the inside of my car because the cup holder was way too flimsy. I told the manager named Josh, and all he said he could do was say he's sorry. Sorry isn't going to clean up the mess caused by their stupidity! This guy spilled 3 lemonades all over his car, and instead of going, "Ah, I'm so stupid," he went, "Ah, Josh is stupid!" This just goes to show that you could do your job perfectly and still have angry customers. Also, what did you expect Josh to do? Hey, I just spilled all that lemonade you gave me in that cup holder! Oh my goodness, how could I be so stupid? I forgot to turn off spill mode! Bring your car out back and I'll get a straw and then I'll suck it dry.
No need to thank me. That's what fast food employees are for.
I can't talk about fast food without bringing up a small local sandwich shop in my area. So here are some of my favorite one-star Subway reviews. We went to the location in blah blah blah. We had 30 minutes to close. I know, sucks, but there was a huge regional wrestling match and there were some starving boys. I walked in and let them know we had 20 sandwiches to order.
We didn't have crazy expectations. Substituting meat, forget tomatoes if you're out. We don't need toasted, let's just feed these boys.
9 sandwiches in, the sweetest girl who was making our food said her manager said, "Shut it down," and they're not making the rest of the order. The manager had the employee in tears, and 9 boys didn't get food. I was mind blown. We offered big tips, gave free oil changes to employees working hard to make money. I run a mechanic shop and stay late for customer a lot. We didn't have crazy expectations. We just wanted a whole catering order 30 minutes before close. I know some people are going to be thinking, you're a business that's still open, so you have to do what the customer says. But I want those same people to ask their mother to make them 20 sandwiches at 9:30 p.m. and let me know what she says. And if those 9 boys were still upset, they should have just suplexed the manager into a table and then made the cold cut combo themselves. I placed an order online for 2 footlongs. I walked in to pick up my order, and I was thankful I didn't leave a tip. I received 1 footlong, but ordered 2. It's very clear on the receipt that was attached to the package. I showed it to the woman working behind the counter, and she laughed and said, "Oh, I didn't see that. Let me get that for you." Not sure why she missed that. Has never happened to me before. Is she on something, or does she not know how to read English? I had to stand there and wait for her to make the other footlong. And then this person continues to write a whole 500-word manifesto. Are they on drugs? Can they read English? Jeez. Do you think this reviewer is going to tell their grandkids about this story? And then I had to stand next to the sneeze guard for 2 minutes. Okay, Grandma, can we go? And they forgot the mayo! There are a whole bunch of lengthy reviews just like this. And for these types of reviews, I, like, start thinking about these people psychologically. I feel like these people either have something else going on or nothing else going on. I'm sorry that your lunch was ruined, but if this is the biggest problem in your life, you're doing all right. And maybe this wouldn't have happened if you left a tip. I went to the location at blah blah blah. The guy Frank there needs to take some customer service classes. He is not friendly, and when I told him he should be more friendly to his customers, he told me to go ahead and call whoever I wanted to complain. Frank, I love you. You don't need to take customer service classes. You need to be teaching them. IDK, who was working at around 9:45 on May 17th, but somebody needs to give them a hug. I pull up to the window to pay, and there was 3 girls standing there doing nothing. One of them mumbled my total and stuck out her hand. I gave her my card, and she did her thing.
Then she handed me a crumpled mess of a bag and two drinks with, like, zero ice. No have a nice night, no thanks for stopping in, not even a hello. IDK if all three of those girls lives together and somebody ran over their dog or something, but all three of them looked like they absolutely hated being there, and me ordering my meal was the biggest inconvenience they could have experienced. I feel so bad for these workers, they need a hug, but also screw them one star. I can't believe this McDonald's took my review down, but that's okay, I will recite it. They had no barbecue sauce for their nuggets the whole Memorial Day weekend. For all you barbecue sauce lovers out there, when you went to this location on any of those days and asked for barbecue sauce and you were told they didn't have any more, you must have felt crushed like I did. Like, what was the point of ordering nuggets and finding out they didn't have barbecue sauce afterwards? Why didn't they disclose that fact before ordering the nuggets and paying for it? I'll tell you why. Because they wanted to take advantage of us, just to get that sale. What, the employees do take the barbecue sauce to their homes to use for their own Memorial Day weekend barbecues? This is one memorable, unfavorable moment that will be remembered for years to come. You know, there are many who are barbecue sauce lovers out there that went through the same feeling I did when I ordered 3 20-piece nuggets just to find out afterwards they didn't have any barbecue sauce. Like, if you agree. I don't want to jump to any conclusions, but do you think they're out of barbecue sauce because the world's number one barbecue sauce lover keeps ordering there? Going through all the trouble to write a review and then recite the review again, all because they were out of barbecue sauce, seems like a lot, but 60 nuggets with no sauce on a national holiday is a tragedy, I'll give you that. I love that this guy didn't even consider that they were just out of sauce and instead went full conspiracy mode, thinking the employees were hoarding the sauce for their own barbecue. You gotta have barbecue sauce for your barbecue. It's in the name. I'm not going to act like every fast food restaurant is in the right all the time, because I've had my fair share of terrible fast food experiences too. I once ordered a burger from Sonic, and they gave me the burger with no meat. And I went, dang, well, that's how my day is gonna go, I guess. I didn't write a lengthy review to hopefully be seen by someone at corporate. I don't know. I got other problems. If reading these reviews has taught you anything, it's that these fast food workers have to deal with all sorts of customers going through all sorts of problems. So please be the customer who shows a little compassion. They are handling your food after all. Leave a like if you agree. My child works for Whataburger, hasn't been paid since December 2nd. Today is 1-4 and still no paychecks. We've been told lies saying paycheck is coming to the store, then FedEx is delivering it, and still nothing. He's only 18, so I feel like they're trying to get over on him. Not to mention the shift manager Liz is having an affair with some of the employees. Yo, what? A burger? Thank you all for watching the video. If you enjoyed it, then I highly recommend reading some of these corporate office fast food reviews yourself. They're a real treat to read. Just some of the passion that these people have needs to be studied. Obviously, not everyone who leaves a one-star review is an obnoxious Karen, but the ones who go out of their way to review a corporate office are some of my favorites. Thanks again for watching, and wear your seatbelt. A Pokemon Nuzlocke is a set of rules that turn a normal playthrough of Pokemon into a hardcore playthrough of Pokemon. You're only allowed to catch the first Pokemon you see per route, and if any of them faint, they actually don't live anymore, and you can never use them again. The game I will be Nuzlocking will be Pokemon Ruby. Not because I'm copying Jaden, but because Gen 3 is my favorite generation, and out of the three games, Ruby was the one I played as a kid and bought with my own money. It was $40. Imagine paying that much for a copy of the game now. Also, full disclosure, I've seen other PokeTubers who have a deep, uncanny knowledge of this game and use calculators to make the best, most optimal plays, but I'm not quite at that level yet, so I might make choices that some could consider suboptimal.
I thought grass was, like, super effective against water. Why is he super effective against me?
But if you can forgive me and look past all that, then let's get out of this truck and start our adventure. Let's see. Someone's already picked Torchic, and when I played this as a kid, I picked Treecko, so that means we're left with Kipmud! After defeating my rival's Treecko, I headed to Oldale Town and caught my first Pokemon that would be joining our team, Floof the Poochyena. I'm guessing naming Pokemon after pets is very common in Nuzlocke.
By the way, this is how Floof's very first fight went.
Oh my god.
Hey, do you want to learn how to catch Pokemon? No, I'm good. Well, that's too bad. First, you want to get them weak by throwing tiny rocks at them. Traveling through Route 104, I caught
a Zigzagoon.
Igzy the Zigzagoon. I'm probably not going to train her up or anything, but she will be useful teaching useless HMs to. What's that, Igzy? You have an ability where you pick up random objects? And you picked up a revive? Oh, Igzy. I can't use these! Wandering through Petalburg Woods, some guy asked me if I'd seen any Pokemon named
Shroomish!
The main reason Gen 3 is my favorite is because the best Pokemon ever, Breloom, makes his debut in this game. Why, if I found a Shroomish in this forest, I would probably react like this.
This guy was being truthful.
I named Shroomish Goat because not only is he the greatest of all time, but because I was also working on this other video about goats, so I had a lot of goats on the mind. We made it to Rustboro Town and challenged Roxanne, the rock-type gym leader, but thankfully we picked the water starter, so, you know, Kidmup, do your thing. I caught a Talo on Route 116, and keeping with the naming Pokemon after pets theme, I named him RE2. Not to spoil anything, but don't get too attached to RE2, Jaden. We sailed to Juford Town and saw that the second gym was a fighting-type gym, so that meant fighting-type weakness. It was RE2's time to shine.
He's, like, actually a higher level. I didn't like that. I didn't like that. He's too high of a level.
Despite being a lower level, we decided to wing it and managed to defeat everyone's Pokemon, only having to tap out at Brawly's Makahuita, which Kidmup mopped the floor with. Hey, when did you start walking on two legs, Kidmup? The next HM we learn is this terrible move, Flash. The only thing Flash is good for is lighting up a dark cave that technically isn't even required to progress through the game if you know where you're going. I, however, do not. Currently, Goat is the only one on the team who can learn Flash. But I'm like 80% sure once a Pokemon learns an HM move, they can't unlearn it. So I really don't want to teach this S-tier Pokemon an unforgettable F-tier move. Oh boy, an Abra! I bet he can learn Flash. Oh boy, a Zubat! Okay, I'm kind of fudging the rules here. This Zubat wasn't technically the first Pokemon I saw on this route, but does it even count as an encounter if all you do is look at a Pokemon and then they teleport away?
Excuse me?
Look, I just need this useless Pokemon to learn this unrequired move. Zubat, I'm calling you Mr. Flash and immediately teaching you...
No!
Goat, you can learn Flash.
Yay!
After clearing out Team Magma from a museum, we were ready to take on Watson, the electric-type gym leader. Luckily, we picked the water ground starter, so... Kidmup, do your thing. Now what? Do I go here? Here? How did I get here? During my wandering, both the Pokemon I named after pets evolved into bigger versions of themselves, and Goat learned Headbutt.
Can I get rid of Flash?
No!
Hey, lady, I'm kind of lost, so I'm entering random houses and asking NPCs where I should go.
Oh, you have Harbor Mail? I'll trade you that for my coin case.
Coin case?
You know, for gambling.
Gambling? Listen, I don't have a problem. The reason I'm this excited is because one of the prizes you can win at the casino is a Pokemon. A Pokemon that may help me build the perfect team. So, before I checked what the prizes actually were, I bought 500 coins for a measly 10,000 Pokédollars.
Just TMs? Dolls? I just wasted a lot of money, didn't I?
Good news, though. Goat evolved into his perfect form and learned Mach Punch.
Right.
Eventually, I talked to the right NPC, taught Igzy Rock Smash, and while exploring a fiery path, I caught my first fire-type Pokemon.
Oh, okay.
Numel.
Let's Oh, man.
Even though Numals can be found in the desert, have a big hump on their back, and evolve into something called Camerupt, for some reason, I never looked at this Pokemon and thought, camel. I always thought, fire cow. So that's why I named her Cooked Beef. Then, on Route 114, we encountered a Zangoose.
Hello!
I have no clue what this Pokemon does, but it looks way cooler than all the Oddishes and tiny birds I kept running into, so it had to be awesome. Cooked Beef, the 9 levels you have on this goose are more than enough to weaken it. Hit him with an
Oh, please don't. Oh!
Cooked Beef! So, my only fire type died to a quick attack that did 50 damage. Zangoose, or should I say Beef Eater, you can join the team for now, but just know, we could have killed you at any point. It was a challenge not to kill you. We headed up a mountain and fought Maxie, the leader of Team Magma, who had his own floof Pokemon, which Goat took care of, and he had his own evolved Cooked Beef. I sure wish I had one of those on the team. Hey, Beef Eater, why don't you make yourself useful and fight that Crobat? Okay, that's kind of cool. As we headed down the mountain, who did I encounter but...
Who's the new Pokemon?
Another Numel. Immediately, I abandoned Beef Eater to make room for... Return of King. Before we take on gym number 4, I think I figured out a way to get Goat to forget the move Flash without having to beat him over the head with a 2x4. A little Pidgey told me that Goat was about to learn a new move at his next level. So by placing him in the Pokemon daycare and doing some light cardio outside, he'll level up, learn the new move, and forget Flash. And my plan worked like a charm.
Yeah.
It really sucks that this is the only way to get Pokemon to forget an HM move. You'd think they'd have some, I don't know, a move deleter NPC or something. Gosh. Now you'd think that since I picked the water starter, that the fire type gym wouldn't be an issue. But it was. Floof and I quickly learned why biting lava was a bad idea.
Okay.
Thankfully, Kidmup, who... I don't know why I didn't send out first, took out both of Flannery's Slugmas with no issue. But then, she sent out... Torkoal. Even though Kidmup was using a super effective move, he only did this much damage. Meanwhile, Torkoal's body slams were doing this much damage. And paralyzing us! Okay, Goat, I know you're the Goat, but you understand why you can't fight a fire turtle, right? RE2, looks like you're up. Finish her off with a steel whip!
Ah! Dude!
RE2! No! What do we do? What do we do? None of you are great choices. What I really need is a turn to heal up Kidmup, but... Hey, Iggy. Are you aware of the concept, taking one for the team? Given the dire circumstances, this felt like the best choice. Sorry, Iggy. With Kidmup healed, we managed to get Torkoal's health really low, but then Kidmup refused to finish the fight because he was, in his words, immobilized by love. Kidmup, I know you're letting this turtle body slam you on purpose, and you're sick for it!
Do you really think we have a future together?
Okay, Goat, I know this is a fire turtle, but she's mostly using body slams. Could you please... punch this turtle's head off without falling in love. We earned our 4th gym badge, but it wasn't without some casualties. RE2 and Iggy, we wouldn't have made it this far without you. Thanks for everything. We traveled into a sandstorm where I picked up 2 Pokemon, this fossil, and this weird Pokemon I've never seen before, Baltoy. Alright, King, my second chance at a fire type. I know this isn't your natural habitat, but why don't we train here in the desert for a bit?
Moo.
Oh, you found a Baltoy. I just caught one of those. I'm not sure what its moves are, though.
Nuts.
God! Okay, team. I know everyone is upset this thing shares a species with the Pokemon who blew up King, but it possesses psychic abilities that I believe could be very useful. So please, everyone, give a warm welcome to King Eater. No one step on it. We headed back to Petalburg City and faced gym number 5, my dad. Also, I brought Odd One-ish just in case we had another Iggsy-type situation.
Am I an integral member of the team?
You sure are, bud. Despite a few close calls...
Who? Dude! 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 Finish him off. No!
Everyone, including Odd One-ish, made it out alive.
Oh my god.
Good thing we have free healthcare. I don't know what I'd do if someone took away my free healthcare. Not right now, Goat. Across the water on Route 118, I caught Pikachu the Electrike.
Great.
I don't know, he's electric like Pikachu, and his head kind of looks like pickles, so... Whatever, having an electric type on the team is huge. After inspecting all the Pokemon I had, I figured Mr. Flash's flying poison moves could be useful. So I evolved them into Golbat, and then, here you go, daycare lady.
All right, my favorite Pokemon, who wants some ice cream? Gosh, I love you guys. I couldn't ask for a better team right here.
At Fort Tree City, we were ready to take on Winona, the flying type gym leader. Wait, this weird lizard's blocking our path. Kidmup, can you? Oh, cool, you're back on four legs again. Also, Pikachu, why are you blue? The only thing that stood between me and Winona was this incredibly hard two-piece puzzle.
Hmm. How do I get through this? Oh, figured it out.
Pikachu was able to spark Winona's Swellow, and Kidmup, through sheer willpower, tanked all of Altaria's earthquakes, narrowly avoiding death by 8 hit points. Good work, Kidmup. Pikachu, you know what to do. I found a TM for Ice Beam on an abandoned ship, and... King Eater, you can learn Ice Beam? I'm sorry it's taken me this long to realize how awesome of a Pokemon you are. You know, King Eater, with you on the team, I think we'll be okay without a fire type. I entered Lily Cove City, and my rival wanted a rematch. Kidmup knocked out her Swellow, no problem, but then she sent out Grovyle. Ooh, I know the perfect matchup for this. King Eater, why don't you show this grass type that new move you learned?
Dude! Ah! Are you gonna use the hyper potion? No! No!
I can't believe I got that upset at losing a Pokemon that before this challenge I had never even considered playing with. If any members of the Claydol lover community are watching, I'm sorry, I didn't know he hated grass. All right, team, we're not fighting any more gyms until each one of you is in peak physical shape. Floof, why haven't you evolved into Houndoom yet? What about this fossil? Is this fossil any good? We picked the plant one. We got the plant. What about Mr. Flash? Has anyone seen Mr. Flash? Why hasn't that loser evolved yet? Hey, buddy. So listen. We're friends, right? You know, Goat had to stay in the daycare once. Yeah, it was to forget the move... Flash. Look, Mr. Flash, I know I technically shouldn't have even caught you, and I named you after a garbage move I thought you could learn, but I want you to evolve so you can be the best version of you on the team. Don't you want to join the team? I have this soothing bell you can hold on to. Welcome to the team, Mr. Flash. With the team stronger than ever, I surfed my way to an island that had a Pokemon graveyard inside a tall building, and for the first time ever, I could actually grieve with the other trainers. That was a great battle, dude.
Yeah, it was. Here's some money.
So, Kidmup was holding an amulet coin, so you actually owe me 600. We defeated more Team Magma grunts at the top of the tower, and on our way down, I caught what I thought was going to be a super awesome Pokemon, but turned out to be a little disappointing.
Let's go!
My third chance at a fire type, my son, the Vulpix, which I immediately evolved into Ninetales. Why was she a disappointment? I don't know. You'd think a fire type would have no problems defeating a Gloom, but alas... I'm not saying Ninetales is a lame Pokemon. I'm saying mine specifically was. Floof and Kidmup easily cleared the Psychic Gym with Shadow Ball and Surf, and with that, we just have one more gym before we... Is the sun on fire? So I haven't really been paying attention to the story, and now the legendary Pokemon Groudon is angry. And as much as I would have liked to have Groudon on the team, I never found the Master Ball, so we're not risking it. Oh, hey, Wallace. Oh, you're the water-type gym leader? Oh, I hope my fighting grass Pokemon will be okay. No, you don't have to fight the Celio. I'll get Floof to do that. And with our 8th gym badge, we could finally travel through Victory Road and face the Elite Four.
Aren't you forgetting something?
I don't know how you want me to respond to that. This is it. Our final challenge. Each one of you has trained very hard. And as a reward, you'll each be receiving a piece of candy.
You get a candy. You get a candy. You get a candy. You get a candy. You get a candy. And you get a candy. This is it. This is gamer moment to the max.
Kidmup and Goat were able to finish off Sydney's Pokemon with their water, ice, and fighting moves, and my two dogs, Pikachu and Floof, crunched and bit all of Phoebe's ghost Pokemon. Pikachu might be cursed, though. Against Glacia, my son finally stopped being a disappointment and fire blasted her Glalie. Then I tried to get Goat to drain her Celio, forgetting he didn't like ice.
Okay.
Ice and birds, those are his two big no-nos. Luckily, Kidmup was able to earthquake the rest of her Pokemon. Now it was time for the fourth member of the Elite Four, Drake. His Altaria was defeated by Kidmup and Floof, but they both took some damage. Against his Flygon, I sent out my son.
Okay, what about Fire Blast? You're green.
Ah! Then Flygon dug a hole in the ground, but by the time he came up, Mr. Flash was waiting for him and took him out with a fly. For Drake's next Flygon, I sent out Goat.
I don't think, because he doesn't like birds, and Flygon's a dragon?
Yeah, Flygon wasn't a bird. But I forgot a very important aspect about dragons.
Give him a dynamic punch. Nope, okay.
Oh, no! Oh, he knows flamethrower.
Fire and poison, those are his other two no-nos. Instead, Floop and Pikachu crunched Flygon's head off, and then I used Kidmup's last blizzard on Salamence.
Okay, I'm gonna need this blizzard to hit. Please? Yes! Yes! Yes!
We had done it.
Oh my goodness.
We had cleared four champions with some very close calls, but we are all still alive. Now it was time to face the fifth member of the Elite Four. What, you didn't know about the secret fifth boss that's in every Pokemon game? We had one more challenger, Steven. Steven sent out a Skarmory, which was the perfect lightning rod for Pikachu, then Kidmup took out Aggron with Surf, and my son defeated Cradlea with Iron Tail. Then Steven sent out a Metagross, and things got messy. I thought Kidmup's Surf would be super effective against this rock with legs. Turns out it wasn't.
Okay, here's what we're gonna do. I have an idea. Kidmup, if you can last another hit, that would be amazing. Oh, Hyper Beam!
Kidmup, my starter Pokemon, had been taken out.
Okay.
At least he got Metagross's health low enough that Floof could easily finish them off.
That's it.
Then Steven sent out his own King Eater, which I knew from personal experience they hated getting crunched.
I know this Pokemon. He hates getting crunched. I don't care about your special defense. You're getting crunched! It's probably because his special defense went up!
Floof eventually took down Claydol, even though Steven used a full restore on it three separate times.
Of course you were.
Stop it!
Which I get, man. I'm part of the Claydol lover community too. Next was the last Pokemon we needed to defeat. Armaldo. One hit from its ancient power badly injured Floof. So for this final fight, I sent Goat to finish him off. Goat, because he's so awesome, poisoned Armaldo just by standing next to him, and then promptly sky uppercutted him straight in the jaw, just barely knocking him out. Armaldo was clinging onto life when the unthinkable happened. Armaldo knew a bird move.
No! No!
Goat had made it so far into our journey, only to faint inches away from the finish line. I could have sent out a level 5 Zigzagoon and still would have won, because Armaldo died to poison on the very next turn.
The poison's gonna finish it off! Right? I didn't even have to... No! No! Not Goat!
By all accounts, Goat had defeated Armaldo, but he didn't make it! And neither did Kidmup! That was my starter and my favorite Pokemon! No, no, I don't want this trophy! I want Goat and Kidmup! Colleagues, friends, Wally, we gather together to honor two of the bravest Pokemon I know. One of them from the humble town of Little Root, and the other from a patch of grass in Petalburg Woods. Together, they faced gyms, rivals, and a plethora of wild Pokemon. And when the final challenge came, they didn't back down.
This sucks. I hated that.
And that's how my first Nuzlocke went.
Dude.
Grew Wurmples,
dude.
Nothing, dude.
Dude!
Oh, dude. Stop falling in love. No! Tackle's so bad, dude.
Body is lava, dude.
Don't give him a chance to recover, dude.
Dude,
stop it. Bash their skull in, dude.
That was my psychic ice type, dude.
Quick, what do we know about goats?
They stiffen up and fall over when they're scared?
Good, what else? Ooh, I know! Their kids have the same name as our kids. Which is kids.
Yeah, that does open the door for some pretty hilarious puns. Anything else? Yes, you in the back?
You don't want to stare into their eyes for too long.
Well, class, I'll admit, you do know a bit about goats, but you're all forgetting the most iconic goat fact of all. You know,
their goats scream.
Anyone who's anyone who knows anything about goats know that these rectangle-eyed demons make weird human-sounding screams. And we all find these little freaks of nature so funny that screaming goats get referenced in all sorts of media, like commercials and movies, and are still getting referenced as recently as 2024. So why then did Peter Griffin call this a sheep?
Sorry, guys. Somebody emailed me a video of a sheep screaming.
Now that I think about it, Conan O'Brien called this a sheep, too.
There's a viral video going around of a sheep. This is real.
And if this really is a goat, why is the original video called The Screaming Sheep?
And I've never, ever in my life seen a sheep or met a sheep that sounds like this.
Take a good look, because this is the face that will haunt your dreams.
What did you see?
Lamb. Ah! They were screaming.
That was the worst Super Bowl call in the history of the Super
Bowl. Sorry to burst the bubble, children.
People are saying it's fake and that it's dubbed over.
It's good.
This is real.
Chapter 1. Why did we all think this was a goat? This has to be like one of them Mandela effects, right? You're telling me this unedited 6-second video that shaped an entire generation's perception of what the common barn animal goats scream like wasn't even a goat? Someone's been pulling the wool over all of our eyes. Or maybe the original poster is deceptive and untrustworthy, and this really is a goat. Hey, I'm not gonna stand for you questioning the integrity of the original poster! They would never lie to us! Okay, let's see. All the other videos on their channel are of sheep. In fact, it's only sheep. I can't even find one stinking goat on this whole stinking farm. And if we get real investigative and use an internet archive, we can clearly see that the video was always called The Screaming Sheep. But I'm positive it's screaming goats we love so much, because if you type screaming goats into Amazon, you get all of the screaming goat merch, and if you type screaming sheep, you get all of the screaming goat merch. And, just because I have another example, in the Shaun the Sheep movie, they had a whole farm of sheep that any one of could have screamed, but it's the one and only goat character that goes... Granted, the sheep in the original video was just recently sheared, so I understand that it doesn't immediately give "this is a sheep" vibes, but were Peter Griffin and Conan O'Brien really the only ones who read the title while the rest of us collectively thought,
I think I know what a goat sounds like, and that is definitely a goat.
How did we get from a 6-second video of a screaming sheep to all these goats? Chapter 2, The Beginning. According to this Google Trends graph, from 2005 to 2008, no one gave it about screaming goats. And that makes sense. No one knew they could do that. But then, just at the start of the 2008 housing market crash, we see a little bump. I believe this is because videos of animals making unexpected sounds was kind of the thing back then. Videos like Man Goat and Man Argues with Spitting Goat made the rounds from 2008 to 2011, but their success kind of stayed on the internet, you know? Like, they were funny videos, but nothing I'd make a commercial about. 2012 rolled around, and people were done with screaming goats. But one user still had hope that, in time, people would once again care about screaming hooved animals. On the 8th of April, 2012, while everyone was enjoying a nice Easter Sunday on the screaming sheep farms, the YouTube user AJQ2891 captured the exact moment that their recently sheared Oxford sheep Ophelia let out a humorous and completely genuine scream. Then, for the rest of the day, they painted eggs or something, I don't know. But then, on the very next day, AJ posted the video for the entire world to witness Ophelia's monumental sheep scream. And almost overnight, the video would be seen by no one. And it would stay that way for the next 5 months, until one day when the video would fall upon the eyes of a Redditor.
And baby, I'm low on karma.
Ophelia's video got posted on Reddit, and then reposted on Reddit, and then seemingly overnight, Ophelia the Screaming Sheep went viral. Ophelia was so beloved that she found herself off the internet too, on places like Conan and this British show RudeTube that I couldn't find clips for because I'm not British. With Screaming Sheep being the next viral sensation, AJQ quickly ran out to the farm, recorded another hilarious scream of Ophelia, and managed to record some of their screaming lambs. Guess that's why it's called the Screaming Sheep Farms. You know, just every animal here has a weird, unnatural scream. Honestly, it's a nightmare to live here. Also, we know it's Ophelia who stars in the Screaming Sheep 2 because we can see she's wearing the same ear tags in both videos. That, and she screams, like, identically in both videos. But that makes sense. You know, it's the same sheep, so of course it's going to sound the same. You know how consistent a sheep's screams are these days. We're not really going to be looking a whole lot at these two videos, but they're going to be important later on, so just keep them in the back of your mind. Things were looking great for our girl. She was beloved by millions of people who all found joy in listening to the soothing sounds of her completely genuine sheep scream. Chapter 3. Seriously, why did we all think this was a goat? I wasn't able to find the original Reddit post that exploded Ophelia into stardom, but we do know a Reddit post did exist because it was mentioned in the Screaming Sheep NFT description. Okay. Apparently, a lot of old viral videos are now non-fungible tokens. I don't really want to get into that right now. If we instead just shift our focus to the NFT's description, we find a lot of useful information. Like, this is the only place I've found where we learn Ophelia's real name. I'm hoping it's accurate. Now, this might just be how I read things, but when I read, "This is Ophelia. I filmed the Screaming Sheep Easter morning," I was under the impression Ophelia was the name of the person recording, AJQ. Luckily, we have the Screaming Sheep 2's NFT description to clear things up. See, I told you those videos are going to be important later on. Ophelia, the sheep featured in the original, is also the star of this video. Oh, I get it now. This is Ophelia. Like, you're pointing at her. This is Ophelia. Hi, Ophelia. Anyways, getting back to that uncredited Reddit post, I was able to find this Reddit post from September 7th, 2012, but I have reasons to believe it still wasn't the Reddit post. However, this post does give us some valuable insight into what a viral Ophelia Reddit post may have looked like. Already, there were a surprising amount of people who were commenting things like, "Oh, take my upvote, kind stranger. Hey, you know what this video reminds me of? a different screaming goat video! Since there had already been a precedent of goats being the common barn animal that made weird, unnatural screams, and because Ophelia had the most goat-looking haircut that day, that if someone told you, this is a goat, you would believe them unquestionably, because why would someone lie about that? Turns out, people lied about it. Ophelia's video was featured in multiple and extremely popular goat screaming like people compilations. And I can't really blame the people who made these compilations because they couldn't make a whole separate sheep scream like people compilation. I've only found one other video of a sheep screaming that wasn't on AJQ's channel. And that's not enough to make a whole compilation. Misinformation about Ophelia's species was rampant. No one had an NFT description to fact check because, honestly, the concept of that is kind of insane. They just had to trust reputable news sources like Anderson Cooper to get his facts right. And even he couldn't do that!
Now, I've seen a lot of creepy goats on YouTube, like this one.
Chapter 4. I knew you were trouble. In February 2013, the YouTube user Goosick had the brilliant idea of editing Ophelia's scream over a popular Taylor Swift song. Huh, don't you wish you thought of something like that, AJQ? Replacing the audio of something with a goofier and unexpected sound? People are so creative. I wish I could show you the specific edit that I'm talking about, but I know Miss Swift won't like it if I play even a second of her song, so we're just gonna have to do this. Never mind, I don't want to do this. I'm just going to assume you've already seen the edit that I'm talking about because it was viewed by everyone. Everyone saw this edit. Taylor Swift saw this edit. And she liked it.
It's good.
I know I don't usually tell stories about my personal life, but if you'll allow me this one time, I remember one night in 2013 being at a high school dance, and the Taylor Swift goat song came on, and right when the beat dropped, all the teachers supervising hadn't a clue why the entire school screamed. It was because we were all mimicking that hilarious screaming sheep. Now, the issue with all of this is that Goosick titled their video, "I Knew You Were a Goat When You Walked In." So history's changed forever. February 2013 was the start of the screaming goat meme. During this time, there were plenty of real videos of real goats making real screams that were also shared and beloved by people. But there's no denying that Ophelia's scream was the goat of goat screams. And she's not even a goat! YouTubers react to goat remixes! Commercials featuring screaming goats! Hey, what animal did they get in YouTube Rewind 2013 to scream? Oh, that's right, it was the goat. As much as AJQ tried to remind people of Ophelia's species in the description, the damage was already done, and the meme had gone completely out of their control. You might think that, like any other meme, people would have their fun with it, but eventually they'd move on. But that didn't happen with this particular meme. No, Ophelia's goat scream was about to find a new home in Hollywood. In November 2014, something happened that caused people's interest in screaming goats to massively spike up. And I have no clue what caused that. I don't know. It's one of those unsolvable mysteries, I suppose. Look, in all of my research, I couldn't find anything significant that would have caused this massive spike. So think back. Did you ever use Google to search for screaming goats in November 2014? And if so, why? But while we're looking at the Google Trends graph, only 3 months later, we see another bigger peak in interest at February 2015. And I think I know what caused that. If I had to pick the most important date in screaming goat history, February 1st, 2015, would be like in the top five. Solid A tier for sure. On that specific Sunday, three different companies all released commercials referencing screaming goats. How did I know it was Sunday? Because it was Super Bowl Sunday, baby! You know, the season finale of football that gets around 114 million viewers? It's such an important football game that companies will pay top dollar for a couple seconds of ad space. And the 2015 Super Bowl, Super Bowl Xlix aired two Screaming Goat commercials. One of them just using the original clip of Ophelia, which I'm still counting as a Screaming Goat commercial because the iSpot.tv page for this ad credits Ophelia as a goat. And that third non-Super Bowl commercial was just part of a Geico campaign, and they played a different ad from that campaign at the Super Bowl, but could you imagine if they played the goat one instead? That would have been so cool. Now, a new and bigger audience of people, people who watch sports, all believe that goats are the ones who scream like that. The reason this Super Bowl is so important to the Screaming Goat historian community is because this was the game that every animation studio executive watched and simultaneously agreed that screaming goats were the funniest, freshest thing ever. Think about it. You're an animation studio executive. You see two Screaming Goat commercials during the same football game. A couple days later, you see a third Screaming Goat commercial. Hey, isn't it almost Chinese New Year? What animal is it this time? Oh, that would be the year of the goat! Within the next three-ish years, Screaming Goats were referenced in animated movies at a rate I've never seen memes get referenced in animated movies before. You couldn't escape Screaming Goats if you tried. Thor 4 beat you over the head with them, and they might be in Marvel Rivals, but I couldn't get these goats to scream when I played.
Come on, scream! Scream!
My theory is that people complained about it, so they took it out, but now I'm gonna complain about it for them to put it back in. And it really gets my goat that goats are remembered as the common barn animal who make that iconic scream, and it's unfair that calling someone a goat is a compliment, but calling someone a sheep is an insult! Goats have already taken enough from sheep! I need to calm down. So, what do you say, Ophelia? Think you can belt one more out for us? For old time's sake? Come on, girl. Do the scream!
Yeah.
What was that?
Yeah.
Stop that.
Yeah.
Ophelia, why aren't you screaming? You were the one who screamed in the original video, right?
Yeah.
Chapter 6, working title, Deception. I'm not proud to admit this, but sometimes I'll watch a video at 2x speed. You know, like an iPad kid. But then YouTube will remember I did that and think I want to watch every video that fast. So it wasn't that jarring when I pulled up the original video and noticed Ophelia was obviously sped up. It only became jarring when I realized the video was playing at the normal speed. I caught this on, like, my 40th rewatch, but this is clearly sped up, right? I didn't do anything to this. This is how the clip has always been. So that means, at some point, this video was put into a video editing software and underwent video manipulation. But that doesn't automatically mean Ophelia didn't hilariously scream. AJ just wanted us to hear the scream sooner. That's why they sped up the footage. And, okay, I will admit that it is a little weird that at the start of the video we can hear the background noises like the wind and other farm animals. But when Ophelia starts screaming, everything kind of just cuts out. But that's probably just because Ophelia screamed so loudly that it drowned out all the background noise. I don't know what a spectrogram is, and all right, I do find it intriguing that Ophelia's scream sounds identical to the scream this cartoon fox made in the short film Pop by Bernard Dairyman. That came out 2 years before AJ's video. But maybe Bernard just used a recording of his own Oxford sheep. You know how similar a sheep's screams are these days. I, for one, would never accuse AJQ of faking this important piece of history that has brought joy to millions of— What's that? They already found the source of the original scream? Stock sound effect from Apple released in 2008? Yeah, can I call you back? So that means it was never a screaming goat. It's always been a silent sheep. A classic example of a lie within a lie. I, of course, was not the first person to crack this case. People were suspicious of Ophelia's authenticity within the first 5 YouTube comments. No, the diligent internet detective who cracked this case and found the original Scream was none other than...
Well, I'm sorry to burst the bubble, children, but those are sound effects.
So now he's involved in all of this. He's gonna need his own page on the wiki. If this is how you found out that one screaming goat video from 2012 is fake, I'm sorry. I know getting lied to is upsetting, but try imagining what it would feel like if everyone thought you were a goat when really you were a sheep. You know what else is fake? Most of the things on the internet. But you know what's not fake? The smiles Ophelia gave you. If AJQ told us from the very beginning that the video was edited, why can't I say that? Would we have even listened to them? We didn't listen the whole time they told us Ophelia was a sheep. I don't think I could sum up my thoughts any better than the YouTube user Just Bored puts it. No sh**'s fake. This is just supposed to be funny. So the next time you inevitably see a screaming goat referenced in an animated movie, I hope you cringe, not because the joke isn't funny, but because you know it was never a goat that made that sound, but rather a sheep that also never made that sound.
Chapter 7. Other things I wanted to mention but couldn't find a good spot for them, so I'm just gonna list them off while opening Screaming Goat merch. In YouTube Rewind 2013, they got goats to reference Ophelia's sheep scream, but they also had a goat make this sound, which is referencing a different viral video called Yeah Lamb.
Yeah.
So in YouTube Rewind 2013, they had goats steal the spotlight from not only sheep, but also lambs. You're how old? Oh my, it moves. The very first screaming goat reference in media I could find was on May 9th, 2015 from episode 25 of Sonic Boom. In case you needed an emergency goat. Ooh, what's in my hand? And then there's also this one. Have you ever made this sound? We have the screaming goat button. That needs batteries. Wait, no, I just need to pull this. That was anticlimactic. Oh, wait, I need to turn it on. Okay, now.
Star, can you do the honors?
The Screaming Sheep 1 NFT was sold at 2.9 Ethereum, which I believed influenced AJQ to sell the Screaming Sheep 2 NFT at 10 times the price, starting the bid at 29 Ethereum. And if you think it's crazy, someone would pay 10 times the amount for a viral... I can't read the card. If you think it's crazy that someone would spend 10 times as much on a sequel to a viral video, then you're absolutely right, because no one bought the NFT. Except for right now. You're looking at the proud owner of the Screaming Sheep 2 and I'm just kidding, I didn't do that. I said screening.
I'm here with Scout, the mother of Star from Party Goats LA. Have you heard of a goat make that sound before?
I have heard something similar, like if they're okay. In distress, especially if they get left alone. Mm-hmm. Here's a fun fact for you. The way you can tell the difference between a goat and a sheep is actually by looking at their upper lip. Ooh. Goat's upper lip is not split. The sheep's upper lip is split, okay. And that helps them eat grasses. It's actually called the philtrum. But goats don't have it. So if you ever have a question, just look at their upper lip, and if it's split and it looks like it's just kind of a cleft right there, right under their nose, that's how you can tell the difference.
Star, what do you think?
We are Party Goats LA. We do all kinds of things, everything goat and sheep related here in Los Angeles. We do brush clearance, parties, events, send a surprise goat with our goat gram, goat yoga, hiking with goats, pretty much anything people want to do.
Hey, thanks for watching this video. Big thanks to everyone who worked on this video and made it possible. They're amazing. And you're amazing. And now you're off into the world, knowing that it was never a goat that made that sound. So, you know, take with that with what you will. See you around. Wear your seatbelt. Love yourself. Have a good night.
This brick is alive. Not convinced? Well, what if I did this?
I'm gonna do a backflip!
That's gonna look so cool, Brickathy!
What are you boys doing?
Brickathy's gonna do a backflip, Grandma!
Are you convinced now? Did the brick feel more alive? I mean, sure, it's still a brick that can't move on its own, but maybe because I put googly eyes on it and gave it a family, you can connect with this brick, and it made you feel emotions. Convincing you that something inanimate is animate is the main goal of the animate ore. They're nothing more than deranged frauds. For the last century, animators have innovated new techniques and styles to this medium, taking it from a spinning wheel that doesn't even use electricity to Spider-Verse. And today, I'm going to talk about all the processes and innovations that have brought the medium of animation to right now. But first, let's go all the way back to the beginning of film, when it was all black and white and people had to put up text whenever they talked. Early on, filmmakers discovered a very simple trick to make anything appear alive in front of a camera. And that simple trick was called... You're filming something, and then stop the camera, and then move the thing slightly, capture a new image, move the thing again, and continue to do that a tedious amount of times. On the film, that thing now magically looked like it move on its own. And with this technique, you could make literally anything appear to be moving. Anything. But some filmmakers took this art form to an extreme level and created whole characters out of clay and a posable metal wire system called an armature. Now, animators can sculpt unique characters that bend and pose in much more believable ways. With stop motion, you don't need to hire a real dinosaur or giant monkey to make a movie about a dinosaur or giant monkey. I'm sorry you didn't get the job, Phil. You know, I just had a crazy idea. What if we made our entire puppet's head interchangeable? Now they can make any facial expression and mouth shape possible. We will have to sculpt out hundreds of different heads, though, but, I mean, come on, that'll be fun. That's why we're extreme, baby! Stop-motion movies are still being made and enjoyed to this day, and while new technology does help make the overall process easier, animators are still using the same techniques that were used on King Kong back in the 1920s, where they carefully pose out a character's every movement frame by frame. In order. Stop motion is a medium that I can't even begin to understand how they do, let alone make it look good, you know? Having a stop motion character in gravity-defying poses, making hundreds of different faces, is done solely to make the character feel more alive. And sometimes, to help sell the realism, animators will mimic quirks that only happen in live-action films. I always chuckle when I see a lens flare in an animated movie, because, like, where did you come from? There's not even a camera lens. Unlike me, though, who's always got a camera rolling. Hey, how's it going? Uh-oh. Oh, no! Did you catch that? Did you see the lizard eating a bug? Oh, we got him. Now let's rewind the clip and pause right here. This lizard moves so fast that the camera can't even capture its movements correctly, and he transmogrifies into an amorphic blob that barely even resembles a lizard. But do not fret, dear viewer. This is called motion blur, and it's absolutely natural. Fast-moving objects are hard to see in real life anyway, so this blurry blob only showing up for one frame actually helps sell the idea that this little guy is moving quickly. If you watch any movie frame by frame, you'll find motion blur everywhere, and you won't even notice. So how do animators who are taking hundreds of still photos handle this naturally occurring phenomenon with things in motion? Easy, they'll draw smear. Animators draw their own blurry blob frame to mimic fast movements. Bodies can stretch, arms can multiply, basically we can sneak in nightmares as long as it's only shown for one frame. Smears, while being very fun to draw, can look very weird and goofy on their own. But in the context of the whole shot, you barely even notice they're there. Okay, maybe now you'll notice them, but that's only because I pointed them out. And since animators are bad boys and don't play by the rules, they can make smears out of anything. Even in stop motion, we can sculpt a physical smear frame like how they did in Laika's Paranorman, which, if you haven't seen, is going to be your new favorite movie. Smear frames can be used anytime, anywhere. Unless you were an animator in the 1920s and 30s and you didn't know about them back then. In that case, you would have been animating something called... In the 1920s and 30s, animators were still figuring out some core principles of animation. Turns out there's 12 of them. Smear frames were used sparingly during this time, with animators usually only drawing characters with multiple limbs to show fast movements. The stretchy, wacky, and spiritually ascending smears that you all know and love weren't really used until the 1940s. Rubber hose characters have noodly, almost hose-like limbs that bend in all sorts of anatomically defying ways. Look at Mickey Mouse's noodle arms that I can now legally show you. The reason characters look like this is because drawing noodle arms and not worrying about anatomy is easier to draw. But like, just because something has noodle arms doesn't mean it's bad, you guys. What these animators were able to accomplish with the technology, if you could even call it that, is nothing short of dark magic. And the very same studio that made Steamboat Willie wanted to push the envelope and show the world that animation could be more. It doesn't just have to be noodly characters with Pac-Man eyes. They were going to animate a realistic woman with proportional arms that don't move in weird, exaggerated ways. And oh god, her noodle arms are moving in weird, exaggerated ways. In 1934, Disney released a short called The Goddess of Spring, being their first attempt at animating a character with what was supposed to have real human anatomy. They still had a lot to learn, obviously. Now, animating a quote-unquote anatomically correct human is actually a much harder task than you might realize, and that's because of the uncanny valley. Get more and more human characteristics, we hit an interesting point right here when something looks almost like a human, but is just a little off. Our pattern recognition brain starts setting off alarm bells and go, ugh, something is definitely wrong with that almost human. I am entering fight or flight right now. So if you're trying to make something look as close to a human as possible, but are just a tiny bit off, everything crumbles. The Goddess of Spring was still good practice for Disney because only 3 years later, they released the world's first fully animated feature film, Snow White. Can you really blame Disney for going 6 times over budget to make this movie? I mean, just look at how these human characters are moving. 10 years before Snow White, animated humans looked like this. So going from this to this in only 10 years? How? I can't get over how real these human characters look sometimes. Almost too real. Well, I think you're old enough to learn about the dangers of rotoscoping is the process of taking real-life footage and then manually tracing over every frame, resulting in an animation with unreal levels of realism. And I say unreal derogatorily. You're basically slapping a cartoon filter over live-action footage, but instead of simply slapping, you're spending multiple hours doing mindless and tedious drawing. Rotoscoping is not the same as filming a human actor and then later referencing that footage, like what Disney did for Sleeping Beauty or Alice in Wonderland or any movie ever, because animators use references all the time. People had figured out how to rotoscope other people long before Snow White. So of course Disney, who was trying to convey real human movement, rotoscoped some shots. The problem with rotoscoping is that we start to sneak our way back to the bottom of the uncanny valley. Animated characters often do and should break the laws of physics. They can squash and stretch into weird proportions and be drawn in unique and interesting poses. And look, Snow White is still a masterpiece of a movie. The rotoscoping is fine, you barely notice it. It's good, it's a good movie, and it made Disney a lot of money. Also, how did Walt animate these shots of things reflecting in the water in 1937? What, did they put special glass over paintings to make it look distorted or something? Who would be crazy enough to do that? If you made a whole movie entirely rotoscoped, what you end up with is Ralph Bakshi's The Lord of the Rings. Notice anything off about these characters' movements? Look at how Gandalf moved just a year ago in The Hobbit. Now, Lord of the Rings. Hobbit. Lord of the Rings. Almost every shot in this movie was rotoscoped, and the shots that weren't used live-action footage with a filter over it. I'm not saying that rotoscoping is bad. You just have to use it correctly. A character switching from traditionally animated to rotoscoped is incredibly funny, and always will be. The YouTuber Joel Havier makes very entertaining rotoscope skits that feel like a fever dream, and I mean that underogatorily. And a lot of music videos get away with rotoscoping because, admittedly, rotoscoping is a very cool visual. Now, I wish I could say the first Lord of the Rings movie was a hidden animation gem, but I don't know, it wasn't. It's not on my top 10, I'm sorry. It probably made a lot of nerds in the 70s happy, but thankfully The Lord of the Rings has been adapted into many other forms of media, like video games, Magic the Gathering cards, and anime.
Anime?
They're making a Lord of the Rings anime?
They're making a Lord of the Rings...
You thought Hollywood, California was the only place in the world making moving pictures? Japan's been making their own moving pictures too, and some of them are moving drawings. There are entire college courses on the history of anime, but you're not paying me tuition, so we're gonna have to skip over a couple things. A lot of early anime is now lost media because cinemas didn't preserve film back then, and an earthquake destroyed many studios in 1923. Some Japanese animators created shorts out of paper cutouts because buying thousands of celluloid sheets was too expensive, and they had some very unique character designs. And some Japanese animators took inspiration from Disney and made shorts that looked very similar to America's rubber hose characters. Then, by the 1940s, some major world events happened that got most of the world involved, and both American and Japanese animation studios were affected. But after all that, in 1948, one studio called Japan Animated Films, later bought out by Toei Animation, set out to be the Disney of the East, and they made cartoons about magical schoolgirls, and are still in business to this day and made some other less popular shows. One animator who quit working at Toei created his own company and made an anime based off his comic about a robot boy. Hey, I kind of like that art style of drawing humans with big expressive eyes. Let's do more of that. That same year, another studio made an anime about humans controlling giant robots. I wonder if that's going to inspire a whole new genre. And this guy was commissioned by American studios to make stop-motion Christmas movies like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Meaning Rudolph is anime.
Nani?
By the 1960s, Japanese shows started airing on televisions all across the globe, and they continued to make unique and interesting stories with amazing animations that were beloved by billions of people and grew into extremely profitable franchises. Like, I'm talking the most profitable franchise. By the 1970s, Disney was still very much the animated movie gold standard, making big-budgeted movies with family-friendly values. Which is fine to do, kids love bright colors and talking animals that only cartoons can offer, but some studios realized that animation was a medium, not a genre, and made animated movies exclusively for adults. That's part of the reason why the first Lord of the Rings movie was entirely rotoscoped. It wasn't trying to be cartoony and over the top, it was trying to be real and gritty. Animation could be anything for anyone of any age. But really, if you think about it, there hadn't been a new way of showing people moving drawings since those very early days of black and white stop motion. In stop motion, you take a picture, move a figure, take a picture, move a figure. In cell animation, you take a picture, move a cell, take a picture, move a cell. Everything's just been a series of pictures moved manually in front of a camera this whole time? Always has been.
You've got mail.
Oh. It says the entire animation and film industry is about to be flipped onto its head forever and ever. Yeah, right. I'm sure this whole computer thing is just... Ever-increasing advancements of technology, we were able to achieve increasingly advanced... achievements, like putting a guy on the moon, and drawing silly little cartoons more efficiently. Gone are the days of having to physically draw everything out on paper and underpay a team of hundreds of pretty girls to hand-paint every frame. Now we can use this fancy new computer to render everything out for us. All we have to do is create a real-life mold of our real-life human hand, then draw 350 triangles onto that hand, then manually measure out the X, Y, and Z coordinates of 800 different data points. No, come on, this is gonna be so much faster. Put that pencil down. Now we just program in a couple of keyframes and we get... Huh. We still don't have the processing power to render everything out. Oh, I know! We'll just point this long exposure camera at the computer screen. Get these art supplies out of here. This is the future. And when everything's finished rendering, we'll get this! A whole human hand moving on its own without having to draw a single frame. This process is exactly what Utah University student Ed Catmull did in 1972. And while it might not have been more efficient than drawing everything out by hand, it showed that computers were capable of rendering out three-dimensional animations. This was made after we landed a man on the moon, by the way, so don't tell me this was CGI. As the computer's processing power grew exponentially, more and more filmmakers started seeing the benefits of using computer-generated images in movies. A decade after Catmull digitized his hand, films like Tron showcased characters racing on mind-boggling computer-generated light cycles. This might look, you know, bad by today's standards, but these graphics were something that audiences had never seen before. Plus, the movie takes place inside of a computer, so this is probably what people thought the insides of a computer looked like anyways. At the time, computers did a great job at creating rigid, geometric shapes, and animators used that to their advantage. Characters would still have to be animated traditionally on cells, but objects that weren't going to change shape, like black cauldrons, could now magically fly in circles around our characters. Disney really showed off the computer's rendering power during the climax of The Great Mouse Detective, when these two rodents fought each other inside a clock tower and all the spinning gears were generated by a computer. Animators can now make any complex shape move in a three-dimensional space without having to draw a single frame. I mean, you know, except for the characters, they still very much had to draw those. Computer graphics were here to stay as Disney integrated more of them into movies like these Cars in Oliver and Company or Eric's ship in The Little Mermaid, and then they stopped using cells entirely. Starting with The Rescuers Down Under, Disney no longer used cells and made movies entirely digitally with a program called CAPS. So if you ever wanted to own a cell of Joanna the Lizard eating an egg, that's too bad because they don't exist. Which fucking sucks because Joanna was the best goddamn lizard Disney ever made. Don't touch me! TV shows and anime still use cells till about the year 2000-ish, but eventually everyone switched to digital. Now to color a frame, all you had to do was... So computers were great at making rigid, non-flexible shapes, but has anyone ever tried to make... A group of computer scientists who were working for a small indie director named George Lucas were taking this art form to an extreme level and created whole characters completely generated by a computer. Then a small entrepreneur named Steve Jobs hired those computer scientists and made his own company, Pixar. Yes, Steve Jobs was one of the founders of Pixar, and he originally created the company to sell a high-end computer powerful enough to render 3D animations. But no one bought the computer because it cost $135,000. So the team scrapped the computer selling idea and just stuck with making computer-generated cartoons. But they soon discovered a unique problem. The computer had a hard time getting textures right, and everything, including babies, ended up looking like it was made out of plastic. So the team's clever work around this dilemma was to make a movie with the entire cast of characters actually made out of plastic. Or ants. You know, people don't know what ants are supposed to look like. It's fine. Pixar continued to develop new processes to get the computer to generate unique textures and lighting, like simulating human hair or fur, or lighting things in such a way to make everything appear underwater. No other studio was pioneering computer-generated images like Pixar was. And then in 2006, Disney bought Pixar. But I don't think Steve was too upset because 1 year later, he achieved his dream of selling a high-end computer. This time being a little more affordable. A little. Now, I want to squash any misconception that computers do all the animating. Animators still have to manually pose a character's body and facial expression off of a character's... build a complex system of nodes and bones that let them manually pose a character into any position possible. It's kind of like a digital stop-motion puppet, or an actual puppet without any of the strings. All CG characters are just their own complicated version of Pinocchio. Using character rigs is really the only way of animating things in three dimensions. But it's not like we can use rigs in 2D animation. Here in the second dimension, we don't have a fancy Z-axis. 2D animation can only be done by hand-drawing 24 new images every second. Except we don't, I lied. Even all the way back when characters were animated with paper and cells, animators wouldn't draw a whole new frame every frame. Usually, they would animate pieces of a character and paint each piece on its own cell.
You remember Robin? They only drew one body and five different heads. But because cells are a physical object that get harder to handle the more you have, animators could only break a character up into two or three different pieces. But now, thanks to the computer, we can break up a character into as many pieces as we'd like four, or five, or 173! Have you ever played around with the free and revolutionary animation software Pivot Stick Figure Animator? If you're the type of person that says, "Oh, I suck at drawing, I can't even draw stick figures," then you're gonna love this program. On Pivot, you're given a pre-made stick figure or horse that have these joints that can be posed however you like. Each of these stick figure's limbs are just individual pieces that are connected in such a way that make it look like a stick figure. So to make these animations, we're not really drawing anything, we're just manually posing out a character like a digital puppeteer. I wasn't saying you can make a rig out of 173 pieces just to be funny, because that's how many pieces I'm made out of. That's right, me! Even I'm a rig! And can I tell you a secret? Most TV shows use rigs too. Of course, hand-drawn traditional animation is still used to make these shows. It's not a lost art form or anything. But rigs are super useful at making still pretty high-quality levels of animation, but at a much cheaper cost. And as we all know, TV animation has to create more animation per budget. But maybe rig animation still isn't as cost-effective as you'd like. And maybe you're not a fan of the complicated puppet look, and you want something that looks more human. Well, there's one more animation process we can try, called motion. An actor inside one of these dorky ping-pong suits, a computer can pinpoint and record that actor's exact movements. Now we can take those movements, slap a cartoon character's model over it, and we get an animation that looks like shit. Motion capture is the rotoscoping of 3D animation. It cuts costs, but the results are too human, and we're back at the bottom of the uncanny valley. That's why the kids from the Polar Express look so nightmarish, because they are following the exact movements of Tom Hanks. Yes, Tom Hanks, the adult man, did some motion capture for the small, nameless hero boy from the Polar Express. There's probably a reason we haven't made a fully motion capture cartoon in over 10 years. Because it looks weird. But I mean, that didn't stop one of these movies from winning an Oscar in animation. And before you ask, no, it wasn't Monster House or Tintin. It was Mars Needs Moms, duh. Just like rotoscoping, motion capture can be used correctly. Computer-generated characters acting side-by-side real human actors look decent. It's not that jarring that these creatures who exist in a live-action world are moving just like live-action people. And let's not forget all the VTubers who use motion capture technology to bring their jiggly assets to life. No matter what method someone uses to try and convince you that something else is alive, I think is incredibly cool, and I hope you think it's cool too. But maybe you don't think it's cool, and you don't care about animation, and you just put this video on in the background while you were cleaning. That's totally fine, I do that all the time. I just like learning about how all my favorite animated pieces of media get created, because it's not always the same process. And I think it's great that new technology is allowing anyone to express themselves in whatever way possible. A person expressing themselves. Those are the three key words here. From the big studios that are just now pioneering new and interesting styles with digital animation, to the indie studios that have access to incredible technology which allow anyone working from their bedrooms in their pajamas to create some truly masterpieces of animation. So, if you're the type of person that likes to trick people into thinking that something is alive, then you deserve all the respect in the world. In fact, here are some cool people that made the animation in this video possible. Hello, you just made it to the end of this video. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm still trying to figure out this VTuber model, so I'm over-enunciating my words. The technology behind this is beyond my comprehension. If you're still deciding what to get for the holidays, then great news. We have mystery boxes over on my website, so you can leave the deciding up to us. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm gonna go take a nap. Are you still watching? Oh yeah, she's coming back.
Oh. So you know those books you make in elementary school?
So what is ASMR?
100,000 subscribers.
Why is it socially acceptable to know everything about sports and dress up, but it isn't acceptable to dress up in fursuits and go to cons?
I used to work at a very small local sandwich shop. I don't know if any of you guys heard of it. It's called Subway.
So I used to work at Subway.
Subway part 3, baby!
Garfield, that's not pieces.
700,000 subscribers!
My channel recently hit 1 million subscribers. My sister decided to name him Harry.
You.
See. There exists a baby naked gen pup. 3 million sprinkles.
I have Jaden Animations here.
Hi, hi, hi.
Hey, hey, look at me. That's not how you...
Welcome to the 10 million subscriber milestone special.
Being in quarantine has sucked a lot.
We're making a Netflix show.
Yeah, that's me.
Oh no, I just killed James. He made these cookies for me?
Wow, that's so awesome.
Ah, that's another one.
Hey, like, you don't need a background artist to
sing the background if you just use it. This is just how I process things. Okay, I have to make a YouTube video about it.
Yes! Here's a little social interaction life hack I've discovered. If you're meeting someone new and you want to get to know them better, and you see any semblance of a tattoo peeking out of their sleeve, compliment it. If that person doesn't want to talk about their tattoos, they'll say, "Oh, thank you." Anyway, this is my stop, but if they do want to talk about their tattoos, their face will light up and then they'll do the rest of the talking. I realize that by giving you this advice, now anytime I compliment someone else's tattoos, it will seem disingenuous, but it's not, most of the time. I love all of your tattoos. That's right, I'm talking to you. I love your tattoos, dude. Whether it's how you got the tattoo, the meaning behind the tattoo, or being a tattoo of something you like, every tattoo is a story. And most people love telling stories about themselves. I wouldn't know anything about that, personally. I never understood why some people liked talking about their tattoos until I got one of my own. What, you think I'm gonna make a whole video about tattoos when I didn't even have any? That's right, I'm a marked man, Mom. What are you gonna do about it? Stop unconditionally loving me? Yeah, right. Wait, what are you doing with that cheese grater? Okay, but in all seriousness, can you make sure Grandma doesn't see this video, Mom? I don't wanna upset her on the way out. Back in the day, tattoos used to be a symbol of rebellion and meant you couldn't get a job. No regrets, baby! But I feel like tattoos are getting more and more accepted, if not expected. I'll see a jacked, bald guy covered in tattoos and think, okay, yeah, he was meant to look like that. For me, the idea of being a badass tattooed guy with a sketch pad and a beanie and ripped jeans and a beaded bracelet always seemed cool to me. But like most people, when it came to tattoos, I had reservations. Ooh, this is gonna be on my body forever? What if I hate it? I had an idea once of getting these 5 Magic the Gathering symbols tattooed on my forearm. I even dotted them out in Sharpie once just to give them a test drive. But I ultimately decided not to get them because I was worried in 5 years I would go, "Oh, these? I was really into Magic the Gathering in my 20s. Not anymore, though, so now every morning I wake up with impending feelings of shame and remorse that I even decided to get this thing. And I didn't want that to happen, even though I've been playing Magic for over 15 years, and it means a lot to me, and I'm gonna be buried with my Sliver deck, and... alright, maybe I should just get it. Even though people know that tattoos are permanent, there are still way more bad tattoos than there should be. One time, I saw this picture of someone's tattoo on a bad tattoo subreddit, and I thought it'd be funny to prank my family group chat by photoshopping that tattoo onto my arm. And then I thought it'd be funny to post that picture onto Instagram. I didn't think anyone would fall for this poor excuse of a Photoshop job, but then the internet and my family proved me wrong. Immediately, I started getting phone calls from my parents, and even my book agent rang me up and was like, "Did you actually get that tattoo?" "No, it's not a real tattoo." I mean, it is a real tattoo, but it's on someone else's body. That's their cross to bear. I can only imagine what that person's family and book agent went through. My parents were not supportive of me getting tattoos. But whose are, am I right? Some people, like my parents, say that your body is like a temple, and getting tattoos is like putting graffiti on it. Which, sure, okay, that's why I paid a professional graffiti artist to paint my temple exactly how I wanted. Also, you can't tell me not to deform my body when that's exactly what you did before I was even 24 hours old. Also, Jesus had piercings, and he loved showing them off to his buddies, so I think he'd be chill with a little tattoo. After much thought and deliberation, I finally settled on what my first tattoo would be. This was going to be permanently inked onto my body for the rest of my life. I got a tattoo in Courier New. Luckily, the artist was able to finish this in one session. It took quite a while, almost 5 whole minutes. Now let me explain why I got it. It was so that if anyone ever asked me, "Do you have any tattoos?" I could go, "Why, yes, I do," and then roll up my sleeve, and then I'd go, "Ha, ha, ha." When I showed off my tattoo on Jaden's Streamathon, there was one comment that said, "James having tattooed onto him is exactly the kind of tattoo I expected James to have." And that made me feel really good, because that meant the tattoo fit my vibe. And the second reason I got the tattoo was because I wanted to rebel. Since tattoos were frowned upon growing up, I wanted to have one just to have one. So I got a tattoo with no meaning whatsoever. Which, in a way, is the meaning. Even though the tattoo was small and usually covered up by my sleeve, I still felt anxious about getting it. And I continued to feel that way for about a week after I got it. It was a jump scare every time I saw it in the mirror, and I would look at it closely and go, "Yep, that's really in there. I sure hope I don't regret this." But then, after some time, the tattoo just became a part of me. Like, I didn't look in the mirror and go, "Yep, there's James and tattoo." I would go, "Yep, there's James. Full stop." And from that day on, I loved giving people advice on tattoos. As a marked man myself, I think you should absolutely get that Shadow the Hedgehog full back piece. YOLO, remember? What? You're worried that it's going to look bad when you're 70? Yeah, it's going to look bad when you're 70. You're 70. Don't think about how bad it's going to look. Think about how much you're going to enjoy it from now to when you're 69. I've known people my age who still hide their tattoos from their parents, but like the honest prodigal son that I am, I wasn't going to be doing that. But the next time I visited my parents, I walked into their house, and the very first thing my mom said to me was, "Do you have any tattoos?" She beat me to the punch. What? Why would you ask that? "Because last night, I had a dream that you came home and were covered in tattoos. So, which one of you incepted my mom?" "God?" I said, "Are all tattoos bad?" "Yes, all of them are bad. Even this one?" And I rolled up my sleeve and revealed my massive tat. And her reaction was, "Ah." Oh. Well, it's not the worst word to have permanently inked on your body. Later on, she said, "If you go to a Star Wars party, you could change it to Tatooine." So, I think she took it pretty goodly. Now, some of you might be thinking that my epic sleeve of a tattoo isn't that big a deal. It's tiny and can only be seen if I'm swimming or boxing or wearing a tank top. But you see, after getting tattooed, I experienced what people in the tattooing business call catching the bug. After seeing how much I liked my first tattoo and knowing that I could handle having a tattoo, I was ready to get something badass. I set up a big boy tattoo appointment with an artist I liked, and when I was in the tattoo shop, the artist asked, "Is this your first tattoo?" "Is this my first tattoo?" No, sweetheart. I think I know a thing or two about tattoos. So, without further ado, I would like to debut this out of the blue tattoo. You know, from the Dark Crystal, the Jim Henson 80s puppet movie that I did a video on it years ago. Now I have the best character permanently inked onto my skin forever and ever. That movie will always hold a special place in my heart, and now it'll hold a special place under my skin. And now, whenever I show someone The Chamberlain, we end up talking about The Dark Crystal, which is great, because that's what I wanted to talk about anyways. I think I just discovered an autistic conversational cheat code. When I was getting it done, the artist asked me if there were any other tattoos that I wanted to get, and I said, why, yes I do. I wanted to get the computer from Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared, because I also love that series, and because I'm a computery guy. And I didn't realize until as I was explaining it to the artist that both of these characters are puppets. So, I don't know what that says about my psyche. I never thought that I liked puppets that much, but if anyone wants to psychoanalyze me in the comments, that'd be great. And speaking of YouTube comments, I know a lot of people are going to bring this up, so I'm just going to address it right now. You probably noticed that Chamberlain isn't holding his iconic triangle scepter. Yeah, I already know that. That's because he's holding the Emperor's scepter. It's like my own little headcanon. He got to be the Emperor because he's cool and awesome. And come on, Dark Crystal fans. You think I don't know my lore? I didn't get the wrong scepter or anything. You think I'd get something wrong about the Dark Crystal? Okay, you want to know what happened? I own a Chamberlain statue because, of course, I do. And I took pictures of it to send as a reference image to the artist. And I totally forgot that I accidentally broke off his triangle scepter. And now, because of that, he's holding an entirely different scepter on the tattoo. But you know what? I don't care. This one's better. It's a more clear silhouette. Now, this time when I went to show my parents the tattoo, I don't know exactly what I was hoping for, but I wanted to see some dramatic pearl clutching. You know, just some real disappointment. Chamberlain had to be split up into two sessions, and I only got one done when I went to Arizona for a wedding. I saw my mom, and she didn't immediately ask me if I had any more tattoos. God didn't tattle on me this time. I told her, Mom, I gotta tell you something, privately. What is it? I need you to keep a secret from Grandma. Okay. I'm serious. Grandma can't find out about this. Okay. Look, it's Chamberlain. And I showed her the unfinished tattoo, and she went, oh, do you even like the Dark Crystal that much? I mean, yeah, the plot's kind of mid, but it's a cool world. Why were you more upset about my fake Baby Yoda tattoo than my real Dark Crystal tattoo? She didn't care, and neither did my dad. And you know what? I actually showed my grandma too, and she liked it. I can't make these people mad, no matter what I do. One of my cousins is a tattoo artist, and I was talking to him about tattoos, and my mom said, oh, you should get your cousin to finish it. And even he said, do not do that. Speaking of tattoo advice, if you're thinking about getting a tattoo, I think you should wait. Obviously, it's your body, your choice, but with the minimum age of tattoos being 18, and in some states 16 with parents' permission, I just can't imagine being happy with any tattoos 16-year-old James could think of. All I'm saying is that I'm glad I waited and gave myself time to really know if this is what I wanted. And it was. I know you're young and you want to look as hardcore as possible, but you can still get a tattoo when you're like 23 and it'll look good, trust me. No matter what tattoo you get, it's a way to express outwardly to the world what you like, what you want to remember, and who you are. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm about to get a full back piece of my grandma's face. There's literally no way my family wouldn't love that. Thank you all for watching this YouTube video, and now that you're all done, I'm excited to announce that I have a Funko Pop of me! If that's something you're interested in, then you can head on over to my website and you can get a signed Funko while supplies last. As always, thank you to my amazing team, and the next time I'll see you, I might have more tattoos, who knows? Guys, I have a brilliant idea. What if we do the In My Feelings Challenge? What do you think?
What's the In My Feelings Challenge?
It was that dance people did outside of their moving cars in 2018.
That's stupid.
I know! It's weird to me that YouTube Rewind 2018 came out over 5 years ago, which makes it old enough to be something to reminisce about. There's a fresh generation of iPad kids who don't get to experience the yearly tradition of coming together as a community and watching the newest YouTube Rewind. and absolutely hating it. In case you all forgot, the website YouTube.com used to make these celebratory videos showcasing all the important events and memes that had happened throughout the year. And all these YouTubers would get together and do a silly little dance, and everyone had a grand old time. And since these videos were produced by the very platform you're currently watching this on, Rewinds would always receive a lot of attention. Now, according to my memory, YouTube Rewinds were pretty well received. At first. But you see, as time went on, the general public and the YouTubers involved started to grow weary. People were throwing around words like cringe, and this isn't what YouTube represents, and that's that. And it all accumulated to YouTube's magnum opus, YouTube Rewind 2018. Everyone controls Rewind. Hashtag YouTube Rewind. Which is a video that was so universally hated that it holds the world record for most disliked video ever. A record it will now hold perpetually because of the whole dislike thing. The audience wasn't happy, the YouTubers involved weren't happy, until finally YouTube snapped and was like, "All right, fine, if no one wants it, we'll stop doing it. We were just doing this as a favor anyways." And so YouTube discontinued the Rewind project indefinitely, with 2018 being the last time we ever got a Rewind.
What about me, James?
How dare you even consider yourself worthy of being called a Rewind 2019? A top 10 video? Really? At least 2011 had Rebecca Black hosting. Leave 2019 before I tell you the top 10 ways on how I'm gonna hurt you! So, getting back to the actual last YouTube Rewind, you know, the one with the most dislikes in the whole world, if we skip to 3 minutes and 2 seconds into that video, we see...
Guys, let's do the In My Feelings challenge!
Oh, geez. That's me. I know I'm a little late to the party, but since we've all had enough time to grow and reflect as people, I would like to finally share some of my thoughts and experiences working on YouTube Rewind 2018. The first thing I want to talk about is how none of the YouTubers involved got any type of monetary compensation. At least none of the ones I talked to did. This was a big issue that a lot of other YouTubers had in their expose videos, but I personally was not bothered by it. Was I getting paid in exposure? Yes. In fact, I actually lost money doing this because I had to get my friend Rush to animate some of the scenes, so I, you know, paid him for his work. But what I'm trying to tell you is that as much as I'm about to complain about YouTube Rewind, don't feel any sort of empathy for me, okay? I did this to myself. I think the best piece of advice I could give you is that if YouTube ever reaches out to you and is like, "Hey, do you want to be a part of Rewind?" you should say, "Let me read the script first." But I didn't know that in 2018. And I also didn't know that in 2017. If you look at YouTube Rewind 2017 and watch all the way to the end, keep going. Right there in the credits is me and Jaden doing a floss in space. It was a lot cooler back then. They also wanted all the animators to animate our characters in the middle of a jello fight, and I think they wanted to put our cartoon characters over footage of real-life YouTubers in the middle of a jello fight, but they gave us no direction, and I don't think they ever filmed a scene where they were like, "Okay, real-life YouTubers, remember to leave that spot empty because that's where the animated guy's gonna go." Because, you know, they gotta plan that kind of stuff out ahead of time, right? So instead, they just threw our unusable animated jello fight with no background at the very end as this extremely out-of-place post-credits scene. So 2017 was pretty uneventful for me. Like, yeah, I was in YouTube Rewind, but, you know, I was in the credits. Who's going to stick around and watch the credits, you know? But 2018 was going to be my year. Rewind wanted me back, and this time they were giving me a speaking role. Holy shit. My line was going to be, "Guys, let's do the In My Feelings challenge." And then the YouTuber Swoozy, who would be in his real-life human form, would say, "Right?" And then we'd fist bump Who Framed Roger Rabbit style. So do you remember that trend in 2018 where people were doing that dance outside of their moving car? Well, apparently, that was called the In My Feelings challenge. Back in 2018, I didn't even know it was called that. I thought it was called stupid. Now, if you've at all watched YouTube Rewind 2018, Everyone Controls Rewind, hashtag YouTube Rewind, you might be wondering why, after I specifically suggest we do the In My Feelings challenge, that not a single YouTuber or talk show host can be seen dancing outside of a moving vehicle. That's because YouTube didn't want to promote unsafe behavior, so they didn't want to show anyone dancing outside of a car. So they weren't really doing the challenge then, were they? YouTube, if you don't want to promote unsafe behavior, don't promote the In My F***ing Feelings challenge. Kids are still going to look up the In My Feelings challenge and then watch multiple videos of people dancing outside of cars on YouTube.
We don't want to promote unsafe behavior.
It's on your platform, dog. You know, looking back, that should have been my first red flag, but I was still optimistic. I was so excited to be a part of this huge project, and I knew there were going to be a bunch of YouTubers involved, but I was going to be one of the few animated ones. I was going to stand out. I was going to be the odd one out. Knowing how Rewind handled animation in 2017, when they asked me to be a part of 2018, I told them, hey, love the line, but I think it would be a good idea if we met in person, you know, and that way you can show me everything you're planning, and I can ask you all the right questions. And they agreed and invited me to visit the set the day they were filming Swoozie's line. So I was there, physically behind the camera, when Swoozie said, right? And then fist bumped nothing. I got to experience what it was like to be on a real film set with actors and directors and costumes and catering and makeup, and it was a lot, honestly, for just one line. And maybe it was because they had booked Swoozie for a full hour, but they had this beautiful man say, right? And then fist bump nothing no less than 50 times. It's one line, guys. I think we got it. And then after, like, take 87, my stomach sank when the director said, okay, Swoozie, how about you try saying, guys, let's do the In My Feelings challenge. Wait a minute. That's my line. Are we changing it? Which line am I animating now? Do you want me to do both, just like how you got Swoozie to do both? And what, oh, you'll pick your favorites? I asked the director right there which line was I animating, and he said he was going to let me know. And then we went outside and filmed Swoozie dance in front of a brick wall, and which parts of him dancing was I going to animate my guy next to? He said he was going to let me know that too. So I took all the information I learned that day and referred it back to the other animators. What they wanted were two shots. They wanted 5 seconds of our characters dancing, and they wanted another shot of all of us sitting around a campfire singing horribly. After doing some quick math, I realized that if all 7 of us animators did a 5-second dance, that would be 35 seconds of cartoons dancing, which for a YouTube Rewind would be a lot of screen time. I had a sinking feeling that they weren't going to be using our full 5-second clips. And they didn't even let me know. Now, for my life-changing speaking role, I had to record my line on my own, which normally wouldn't be a problem. But in late 2018, I had just moved to California, and I didn't have my own setup. And to make the whole situation worse, I was only given 1 week to finish my animation and record my line. So, you know, the clock was ticking. Now, I think the second best piece of advice I could give you is that if you're ever in need of a quick jerry-rigged sound booth, go into your closet and hide under a comforter. In fact, hello, real-life human James here, coming to you on a Blue Yeti inside of a bathroom. The acoustics in here are terrible. Could you imagine voicing a cartoon character in this? Guys, let's do the In My Feelings challenge. See, it doesn't work. Now. All right, and now we're here inside of our makeshift sound booth, and you can hopefully hear the quality change right away, you know, like, guys, let's do the In My Feelings challenge. See, you know, we don't need expensive sound booths to have a good time. But back in 2018, I wanted the most important line in my career to be recorded in a professional sound booth. Luckily, I was in luck. You see, California is one of the few places home to something called a YouTube space. A YouTube space advertises itself as a place to aid content creators, providing them with facilities to create content for their YouTube channels. And to access said facilities, you needed at least 10,000 subscribers. A little weird they put a number on it, but I get it. I had just moved to California. I knew I was going to be hitting this place up all the time. When I first went to the YouTube space, I didn't call ahead or set up an appointment or anything because there wasn't an option to do so on the website. But I figured they would have to help me out, right? The line I needed to record was for a YouTube Rewind. And you're a YouTube space! Like, Susan personally asked me to be here, you know? So I drove an hour to the space, I went inside, showed them my sub count, and they said that in order to use the facilities, I had to fill out all these forms on my computer back home. But it's for you to rewind. Then I drove another hour back home and started filling out the forms, but by the time I got to the quizzes, I realized, I think this wild goose chase is probably going to take longer than a week to resolve. With time running out, I gingerly asked my new friend Aaron if I could use his setup, and he said yes, and I didn't even have to show him my sub count. I mean, I showed him anyway, though. So the line you hear me say in the 2018 Rewind was recorded in the Game Grumps office, which I think means, at the very least, Game Grumps deserves to be credited in the description of Rewind. Come on, YouTube! They were the only ones who took me in when your own company turned me away! The deadline was fast approaching. I mean, it was fast approaching as soon as I got it, but I've been in crunch mode before, and I'm sure the nameless video editors were just trying to hit their impossibly tight deadlines too. I reminded myself what I was making all of these sacrifices for. Everyone was going to unanimously love this video and what it represents and look at my channel afterwards and subscribe. December 6th, 2018, a day that changed history. It was raining that day, and the world was exposed to what YouTube had been cooking up. And they all collectively hated it. Like, a lot. Like, to the point where I would be lucky if I didn't lose subscribers. I think the audience knew that none of the YouTubers involved had any say in the creative process. We were just reading our lines from YouTube script, you know? So at least I get to say I'm in the most disliked video in history, and no one's too mad at me. Right? So was all of this stress worth it? No. I got paid in exposure, and the exposure was overwhelmingly negative. In fact, I think Rewind was only positive for one other YouTuber. Do you have any guesses? Jaden motherfucking Animations pulled off the biggest prank of 2018. One of the reasons people disliked 2018's Rewind was because PewDiePie, the number one YouTuber at the time, wasn't included. But Jaden, being the genius that she is, knew he wasn't going to be included again, so she snuck in a PewDiePie reference into her 5-second dance, and no one caught it, and it made the final cut. Jaden was crowned the least cringy part of Rewind, and everyone loved her, and she got a big boost in subscribers, and all I gotta say to that is, good job, Jaden. How are you enjoying that cake and eating it too? Now, there are a lot of valid reasons why people disliked 2018's Rewind. One of them being that the video starts out with Will Smith? He's not a YouTuber. But they didn't seem to mind when 2016 started out with The Rock and 2017 started with The Colbert Show, but whatever. And I don't know if you remember what YouTube was like in 2018, but it was in the news a couple of times, you know, over a few small things. However, with all of that being said, I do genuinely miss YouTube Rewinds. Getting to wake up and go, wow, it's December and a new YouTube Rewind just dropped. I'm gonna watch it. And then I get to see a handful of YouTubers I recognize do a dance and not recognize any of the other YouTubers. And then I get to see the rest of the internet's reaction to it. It's better than Christmas for me. Even if it's the cringiest video ever, we still all watched it together as a community. And I think that's what I miss the most. When YouTube felt more like a community. As long as it's not a top 10 video, I welcome back YouTube Rewinds with open arms. And if they do make a comeback, I don't think I'd want to be a part of them.
Not because I got burned in 2018, but because I wouldn't want to rob another ignorant YouTuber of the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to be taken advantage of and work for free and be a part of history. For now, we just have to live with the 9 rewinds we do have. But if you're like me and are just dying to see more YouTube Rewind content, and I know you are because you're still here, I've discovered a pretty massive Easter egg. In the description of Rewind 2018 is a link to See All the Easter Eggs. And for your viewing pleasure are 13 brand new shorts that I can only describe as skits that were edited together with existing Rewind footage. I don't think that's what an Easter egg is. They're not that funny and are pretty hard to watch, but isn't that what Rewind's all about? Have a good night.
Kiki, do you love me? Are you riding? Don't you ever say, cause I want you.
And I want you.
And I want you.
And I want you.
Don't you ever did a hey?
Oh, that's
that. I don't know the rest of the words.
Oh, that's that.
All right, I think we got it. When you're watching any animated piece of media, I think it's easy to forget that you're watching drawings move. Excuse me? What kind of Harry Potter dark magic is this? Since when did drawings move? I drew a picture of a dog once, but it hasn't moved at all, not even to play fetch. Well, what you're really watching isn't actually moving. What you're really watching is a series of individual frames played at a rapid speed on a liquid crystal display screen that emit photons into your eyeball receptors that get processed by your brain into what it perceives as movement. It was all a trickery, you see. A ruse that you fell for hook, line, and sinker. Now, a lot of you probably already know about the concept of a frame rate, but what I want you to understand is that in cartoons, every head turn, every blink, everything that happens had to be meticulously drawn by a person who studied anatomy and knows about physics and movement, knowing full well that their drawing was only going to be seen for a fraction of a fraction of a second. And you weren't even watching! You were on your phone! Today, I would like to turn back the sands of time and talk about some of the ways animators were able to achieve the illusion of life without the help of modern technology. I hope by watching you can better understand and appreciate the medium of animation as much as I do, because the amount of dedication and hard work that goes into just making drawings move is unreal. And if you're like me and already know a bit about animation history and find this kind of stuff fascinating, don't worry, I didn't have a lot of friends growing up either. Now, we know that animation is just copious amounts of drawings being shown in rapid succession. But how the fuck are we going to get people to look at copious amounts of drawings in rapid succession without a computer? Well, believe it or not, there's actually quite a few things we can do without even having to use a camera. One method we can try is by drawing out all of our frames on a stack of paper. I know that's the time-consuming part, but after we're done doing that, we'll hang up all our drawings side by side on a very long wall. Then we'll ride a bike next to the wall and continuously have our head turned facing the wall, and if we pedal fast enough, we'll zip by the drawings so fast that it'll look like they're moving.
Hey, look! It's a horse!
Okay, you're probably thinking, that's not how animation is made. And you're right. This method of animation is totally impractical, but not impossible. This type of human transportational animation has been done before in subway tunnels, with the results looking pretty legit. I mean, this minion looks like he's totally moving. I might as well be in the cinema. And for those of the gamer variety, YouTuber Pale of Pears was able to achieve this method of animation flawlessly in Minecraft. But if you wanted to do something more practical, you could instead take your drawings off the really long wall and then stack them up like a book and then just flip through the paper quickly, making a flip book. If you have some sticky notes lying around that you forgot about in a junk drawer somewhere, you could make a pretty simple ball bouncing animation really quickly, with the results being, you know, kind of cool. A fun fact, this type of animation was featured in every single copy of the Animorphs books, which I never read. I would just flip through the pages and watch the children in the corner transform into elephants and starfish and this weird
blue alien centaur thing. What the heck was going on in these books, man? Okay, this next method of showing people drawings in rapid succession is going to be a little bit crazy. I don't want to freak you out, but it's basically on the same level as rocket science, okay? We're going to have to jump up a whole dimension for this one. What you're going to do is sculpt out a three-dimensional figure of whatever you want to animate. Let's animate, I don't know, this guy jumping. So first, I'm going to sculpt my guy just standing there, just being a dude. This will be frame one. Now, okay, I know some of you are probably thinking, oh, I see where this is going. You're going to take a picture of the sculpture, then change its pose slightly, take a picture of that, and then slightly change the pose over and over while continuously starting and stopping the camera, making it seem like our subject has some sort of motion. No, actually, we're not going to be doing any of that. Cameras haven't been invented yet in this hypothetical. What we're doing instead is making a whole new sculpture that will be the next frame of our animation. So it'll be our guy again, bending his legs a little bit, getting ready for the jump. All right, neat. That's frame two. Now let's do this a total of, I don't know, 16 times? That sounds good. Let's also make the 16th sculpture look like it came before the first sculpture. So you understand it's going to go from the 16th sculpture back to the first one. It's a loop, like a TikTok. We're doing a TikTok loop. Now we're going to take all 16 of our sculptures and space them out evenly on a round table. Sorry, Arthur, I'm going to need this. Now, make the table spin. That's on you to figure out how to do. I don't know. Maybe get the bike guy from the first example to pedal or something. I doubt any of you are actually following along, but if you are, put all your sculptures on a spinning table right now. And make it quick, all right? I'm not going to wait for you. And now, for the final step, turn your lights on and off really quickly. And if we did everything right, the effect we get is mesmerizing.
What's happening is that the light shines at the first sculpture, and then we turn the lights off.
Cool. Then, as the table spins, the light will turn back on when the second sculpture is in the same position as the first. So we turn the lights on when the sculptures are in the same spot, and we turn them off when they're not. And what we end up seeing is all of our figures standing in a circle performing the animation, and we don't even register that the whole thing is spinning. And congratulations, you all know what a zoetrope is now. Which, I know, is a pretty fun word that you can whip out at parties like, yeah, I know a unique word that starts with the letter Z that isn't xylophone. Another fun thing about the zoetrope was that a 3D rendering of one was featured in the season 2 opening of Mob Psycho 100. So that's what that spinning thing in the intro was. It was a zoetrope. Zoetrope. Okay, let's talk about one more way we can show people drawings in quick succession without a camera, and it's the easiest method by far. So all we need is this glitchy, abstract drawing like this. Huh. Pretty cool and random, right? Except it's not. It's not random at all. I lied. Every line here is placed very deliberately. Let me show you something. If we take this floppy, transparent sheet full of vertical bars and cover up most of the drawing, hey, look at that. The outline we end up seeing looks like one of them kitty cats. Now, if we slide the transparent sheet over and reveal different parts of the drawing, it looks like a kitty cat put in a different position. And if we keep sliding the sheet over, revealing different parts of the drawing, look at him go! This is called a barrier grid animation, and with the right base drawing, you can make all sorts of animations that don't hurt to look at all. And also, I just want to point out that a barrier grid animation was also featured in the season 2 opening of Mob Psycho 100. Hey, do you guys want to watch anime later? So all these different methods of showing people drawings in quick succession, I don't know if there's a word for it, but I'm calling it physical animation. Like animation you can hold and touch with your fingers, you know? All those warrior cat animation memes, that's digital animation, right? This is physical. It's the real deal. But there's one form of physical animation that we haven't talked about yet that's unarguably the most popular and the most important form of physical animation to have ever existed on Earth. Excuse me. Okay, now we're gonna use cameras. Okay, they finally figured it out. With the invention of film, showing people multiple images in quick succession had never been easier. Now we can take something from real life, burn an image of that into a film strip, process it, and then shine a light through it again to get a recreation of the image. And if we roll this whole strip of film over this strobe light, we get moving pictures. That's why they're called movies, because they move. What the fuck? A lot of times, film was used to capture the movements of real people, but it was also used in the same way to capture the movements of people of the animated variety. Let's take a look at an old, old cartoon. The 1968 animated Batman series. The first time Batman has ever appeared in the animation form. You know, the really, really old Batman cartoon that had onomatopoeias appear on the screen during fight scenes? Boom! Pow! Ka-chow! Except they didn't! They didn't do that in the cartoon. Visually showing the verbiage of impacts was exclusively an Adam West thing. In the cartoon, you gotta see those impacts! Hey, can I ask you a thought-provoking question? What the f*** am I looking at? I know it's Batman high-kicking a goon, but how is it moving? This frame was captured on film, so there had to be a physical camera to capture it, right? So where is this drawing? It's not on a computer. Computers in the 60s looked like this. So where is this? So every animated movie and animated TV show and animated anime before the year 2000-ish used what's called cel animation. This frame of Batman was hand-painted, that's right, painted, with special paint onto a transparent celluloid sheet, or cell. And then this transparent sheet was laid on top of a hand-painted background, and then this goon that got kicked, well, he had to be painted on his own cell sheet too, and then this image of sandwiched art was captured onto a film thing, strip, shit. Then the Batman cell would come off and be replaced by a whole new hand-painted cell of Batman, and then that frame would be captured, and then the whole process would repeat again and again until the shot was done. This one shot that lasted a little over a second used 14 different hand-painted drawings of Batman, and the goon had 6, just for a second. Now, because having to hand-paint 20 different images for 1 second is insane, there are some things we can do to cut corners without having to sacrifice too much quality. Like in this shot, Robin takes 5 frames to turn his head, but his body doesn't move, so we can paint his body once on its own cell, and now we only need to paint 5 different heads. And since we already have all the frames painted, we can just use the same frames in reverse to make his head turn the other way. And you don't need to pay a background artist to paint a background if you just use blue. A big part of cel animation was being able to animate pieces of a character independently of each other. That's actually why so many old cartoon characters had accessories around their necks, so the animators could separate the characters' heads from their bodies, making it easier to animate. Fred wasn't rocking that ascot just because it was trendy. One of the nice things about using a computer to animate is that you can play back what you've animated and clearly see if your timing is correct and if there's any quick adjustments you can make. Being able to see what your previous frames are is so important there's actually a term for it called onion skinning. But animators pre-2K didn't have computers to re-watch their work, so here's what they did instead. Before they even put paint onto a cell, they first had to draw all their frames out onto a piece of paper, and they didn't work on the frames in chronological order. Like, they didn't go, okay, I just drew the first frame of Batman. Okay, here's the second frame of Batman. Okay, I'm gonna go do the third frame of Batman. Okay, you do the fourth frame, though. That way of animating is called straight-ahead animation, and some people use it, but the results look pretty chaotic, but it's still used pretty effectively for effects and concert visuals. But most of the time, animators will animate a character from pose to pose. They'll draw out all the important key poses a character will make on paper, and then they'll hold the pieces of paper between each of their fingers, and then quickly flip between their drawings just to get an idea of what a drawing that goes in between those key poses would look like. That's called in-betweening, just so you know. And they still wouldn't be able to get a full playback of their animation until every pencil drawing was captured on film and processed. They just had to trust their page-flipping technique and their highly trained eyeballs and go, yeah, that looks about right. Let's bring out the paint! And because there are hundreds of shots all having to be animated without a computer, can you really blame the animators that some shots of Batman looked like this? Or this? It was old, remember? Old things are bad. Okay, I kind of have a secret. Remember when I said, let's look at an old, old cartoon? Well, I might have overemphasized how old the Batman cartoon is. By the time the Batman cartoon came out, the movie Bambi had been out for 25 years. And are you aware of how f***ing fluid the animation in Bambi is? Dude, Bambi goes so f***ing hard. Walt literally brought in deer from the f***ing woods into their studio just so the animators could be like, oh, that's neat. That's how deers move. I understand this more now. What the f***? I honestly thought the Batman show came out way earlier in the animation timeline because of how it looked. Obviously, these two things were created by different studios with different animators and different budgets, and TV animation always has to create more animation per budget, but all the same techniques and equipment used to make an episode of Batman were the exact same techniques and equipment used to make an episode of Bambi. I don't mean that as a dunk on Batman. I'm more so impressed with how amazing Bambi looks, especially since while it came out, World War II was currently happening. So because celluloid sheets were used to animate every TV show, movie, and anime there has ever been before the year 2000-ish, by my calculations, there are millions of cell sheets out there. Like this single frame of Batman kicking, it's on a cell sheet somewhere. And more importantly, who owns it? Many of the cells that still exist have been sold to the general public. But because of how the paint and time works, cell sheets need to be kept very well preserved. So since cells are very hard to preserve, and because they're not making any new ones, some cells are worth a lot of money. This cell and original background from My Neighbor Totoro sold for $84,000. While I'm writing the script, there's currently an auction going on for this cell from The Jungle Book for $10,000. And I own this cell of Squidward laughing that I got at a convention for $300. It's not an original background. The background's a print. And it's actually not even the correct background for the shot. But I'm just pointing out that not all cells are thousands of dollars. You know, they made millions of these. So you can get a cell from a TV show for a couple hundred. And then you get to own a frame of animation. Like, that belongs to you now. Which I think is super cool. This moment of Squidward laughing belongs to me. And you can't have it. So if you ever visit some friends who really like cartoons, there's a good chance that they have an animation cell somewhere on display. And those are just a handful of ways that animators were able to achieve the illusion of life without a computer. And I do just want to say, just because something was animated on a computer doesn't make it any less artistic. Yes, computers make the process easier and more streamlined, absolutely. It's still a human expressing their creativity and being in control of that. Did you hear me? It's a human expressing themselves and being in control creatively. I hope you enjoyed learning a bit about animation history. There's still quite a few things that I didn't get to cover, like how did Walt animate this panning, parallaxing shot of Bambi where the trees move on separate layers? What kind of technology did they create to make trees move at different speeds? So much hard work and talent is involved in every piece of animation you see, and because of animation, we're able to tell incredible stories that are nothing like anything we ever see in our day-to-day lives. And before I go, can we talk about the intro to the Batman series, please? Oh my God! I just want to go over some quick announcements. I'll be quick, don't worry. The Scribble Showdown Tour is coming back in January to a city near you, but this time the kiddies aren't invited. That's right, only the adults this time. Leave the children at home with the babysitter. If you're like me and are behind on your Christmas shopping, there's some new holiday merch in the merch store, so check it out. But if the shipping won't get there in time, then there's also the Oddballs graphic novel available in retail stores like Target and Barnes & Noble and Walmart. I'll probably see you all in the new year, so happy new year. Thank you.
My dear friends, we are the sowers of chaos, the lords of destruction, the four horsemen. Plague, famine, war. I send unto ye this formal invitation that we gather together once more for the 1,000th annual Boys' Night!
Oh, I got a bunch of fun activities planned for this year, boys. Woo! It's gonna be buckets of fun, guys. Buckets.
We are all tired of your meaningless gatherings.
What?
You don't take the responsibilities of being a horseman seriously. You've gone soft.
I'm not soft. I kill people all the time. Did you see what I did to the queen?
Oh, yeah. You mean the 96-year-old whose death you kept delaying? That queen?
Yeah. I told you, famine, I was busy in 2012.
Do you realize how long it's been since we've started an apocalypse?
Yeah, when was the last time you did something notable?
Oh, my God. Oh, no, I just killed James.
Oh, you killed James? He's the catalyst that holds the very fabric of reality together.
Oh, is that so?
Killing him will destroy the world as we know it. Now that's an apocalypse, baby. Okay, looks like Boys' Night is back on. See you tonight, Death. You better not flake.
Oh... Wife, I need a big favor. It's an emergency.
Oh, sure. Anything for my favorite pessimistic counterpart.
Can you bring this thing back to life?
Is that James? Oh, my stars, what happened to him?
I found him like this.
Well, it's good that I know just the thing to bring a soul back from the spirit realm. All we have to do is the ritual.
Oh, the ritual? That sounds a little off-brand for you, don't you think?
What do you mean? What sounds off-brand about the ritual?
Okay, you're making it seem like this is a dark and scary thing, but knowing you, this is going to be something to do with lemons, isn't it?
Death, restoring someone's soul takes a lot more work than destroying it. The ritual is not something to be taken lightly. I need to have your full commitment on this.
Okay, fine, yes. What do we need for the ritual? So, what exactly is the ritual?
Don't worry, we're almost done. You want a lemon cookie?
Oh, please and thank you.
Hey, Death. You sure you haven't gone soft?
Yeah. And what's that on your head?
Death? Are these your friends? Hey, howdy, I'm live. Cool bird mask. Ah! Are you four doing anything fun?
We're going to commence an apocalypse and unleash total chaos upon the Earth.
Whoa!
Okay, let's pump the brakes there a little bit. But I love the enthusiasm. What if instead we all wore face paint and talked about our feelings?
Face paint? And do what? Have a picnic like a weenie? Come on, Death, you really want to hang out with this clown?
No.
Let's do something actually fun. With your real friends?
Yeah, I mean, you guys are my real buds. I love when we all sit around and say mean things that are sometimes directed at me.
You're the one who wanted to have Boys' Night to start the apocalypse, remember?
Right. I didn't even want to have a picnic.
So we won't be needing him anymore.
Let the apocalypse begin!
Now this is a bucket of fun!
Sure thing, buddy!
No. No! I don't want to do this anymore! I'm calling off the apocalypse!
Now, why would you say something like that?
Because I like life, okay?
You do?
No, like living life. I like going to cafes and eating ice cream and doing stupid activities with my stupid friends. I like hanging out with you and meeting new people and trying new things, but I can't do any of that if I'm just killing people all the time.
Oh, Death, I like doing stupid things with you too. The ritual is now complete.
Huh? It's all fixed? But what about James?
James isn't a person, silly. He's a YouTuber. And as long as we keep believing in him, he'll live on. In here. In our rib cage.
That doesn't make any sense.
Eh, who cares?
Yeah. Thanks, life.
Aw, you're welcome, buddy. So, I heard tonight is boys' night. And I know exactly what we can do.
You were right about life, Death. This is more fun than starting an apocalypse. And I can still scream at kids and say whatever I want.
Yep, this is what life's all about, you know? Eating snacks and playing first-person shooters with your bros.
Oh, hey, I hope you boys don't mind, but I invited some of my friends over. Everyone, this is peace, prosperity, and plenty.
Are you guys ready to get wrecked?
I hope you have a skeleton of fun this spooky season. Seems like I have some tricky treats for you to bring home. Wait a tick. Is that me? And everything glows in the dark? Oh, I didn't even know I could do that. If for some reason you don't want me on your bedroom shelf watching you while you sleep, you can have me on your body. I'm on hoodies, pins, and stickers. Thanks again for being a bona fide group of cool kids. And if you want a chance to meet me, don't wear your seatbelt. Happy Halloween!
Oh!